Welcome to the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast,
your source for coyote hunting, fishing, and more.
We're calling West Texas, and we're filming, and we called 36 coyotes in one night.
3 years ago, I had in one morning 6 bucks that were 3.5 and older within 50 yards of my stand. 6 different bucks, one morning.
It was in October, went made my first coyote stand, me and my cousin. And very first freaking stand, guys, we called up 7 coyotes. 7 coyotes.
Florida itself is a fisherman's paradise. We stick out in the middle of the water, man. There's water everywhere.
Let's kick it into overdrive.
This podcast brought to you by Predator Hunter Outdoors. Locally owned and operated out of Attica, Michigan, Predator Hunter Outdoors will keep you hunting when the sun goes down. Predator Hunter Outdoors has something for every budget and experience level, including lights, night vision, and thermal, as well as a full line of tripods, mounts, and predator calls. Look them up on Facebook and Instagram at Predator Hunter Outdoors, or visit their webpage at www.predatorhunteroutdoors.com. Enter the promo code LIGHT for 20% off light products, and TRIPOD for 10% off tripods and mounts. With today's technology, hunters in the field have more tools than ever to maximize their outdoor experiences. One of those tools is a Grand Rapids, Michigan-based HuntWise app. The HuntWise Pro app is loaded with features including property lines, landowner data, windcast, huntcast, over 250 map layers including 3D maps, a localized rut indicator, as well as discounts of 20% off various name brand products. Step up to the Elite membership and you will get all of that plus HuntCast 2.0 with customizable alerts, Whitetail 365, which gives you season dates and local rut times, as well as the best time to plant your food plots, a 15-day hunt forecast, and 40 to 50% discount on name brand products. Enter code OVERDRIVE for 20% off your membership to HuntWise.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Overdrive Outdoors Podcast. This week, we're bringing you part 2 of our conversation with Mr. Randy Anderson. And this week we actually go into a little bit more detail about things like his 3 stages of calling, howling, challenge howls, closing the distance when you get them to reply but they won't break that cover, what Randy likes to do with the wind, and so much more. Thank you all once again for clicking play and download, and if you have not heard part 1, make sure you go back and check out episode 85. Thank you so much, Randy, for taking the time to record with us. Without further ado, let's get into this episode with myself, Kevin Rott, and Randy Anderson.
Well, you mentioned talking about your 3 stages of calling.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that started again from back when I was bow hunting and couldn't call in until I started howling, letting them know there's a coyote there and all that. And then, so then I shot a coyote. You know, this is back in early 70s in there, or maybe it was even before that, and it come to mind. But I remember I shot a coyote one time, hit it in the back end, spinning around everything. And it was cold, and I was having a heck of a time getting my next shell in. Probably hadn't cleaned my gun or whatever. I was jacking around, and all of a sudden another coyote come right up to it and almost was trying to bite it and jumping around. So I shot it, and I was so shook up I missed that other coyote. But so I kind of remembered that, and then I think it happened a time or two more, you know. So I thought, what if a guy kind of make that sound? So, so at the end, I don't know why I did it at the end, just didn't do it at the beginning, but I always did it at the end. Nothing else worked. Then I go to that. Well, then those coyotes coming to that had heard, I'm sure it heard it all, just hadn't come. And I started doing that, and then here they come. So then that developed. So that was my 3 stages. I'd howl. I called him because I got Bill Austin. You know, Gary again, he said Bill Austin had a cassette tape on how he calls coyotes and all that and stuff. And so we got that and listened to it. And he had some of the howls named, like interrogation. He had a female invitation, challenge howls mainly. He had a domain howl and stuff like that. So we kind of, you know, tried some of that and stuff, but then it was mainly, though, it was always just about 3 or 4 howls, just make them as long as you could. Because, you know, if you think about it, if you're ever out fishing or something, or getting your deer stand, and the first coyotes that howl, usually they're a longer howl, you know, something like that. And so I just, to me, you know, and he would, Bill would say, it's the interrogation howl. You're interrogating the area. You're a coyote. Who's out there? You know, what's going on? Is anybody out there? Just during mating season, you know, it could, you know, if you do it higher pitch, lower, you can do it several different ways, middle pitch, higher pitch, more raspy, whatever. You can turn your head, you know, and that's what I kept doing. I would howl higher pitch, then I'd like answer it, and I would go farther in on a reed, do a lower pitch. Or I'd hum with my voice, make it a little more growlier, a little more, but all louder and everything, you know. And then nothing didn't come in, you know, or answer back. You know, so many people think you howl to get them to answer, and that's not, you know, that's not why I do it. If it does, that's a big plus. You know where they're at. And then a lot of times they will never come, and all of a sudden there's some coyote that never howled and runs you over howling, you know. So you had all these other deals. So I called it stage one. And so you may never get to anything else. And that's the problem. Most guys that I find out talking to everybody, you know, they do that. They'll just do the three howls or something. And then pretty soon it ain't even a minute. They're into their rabbit or their bird or whatever. You know, on your electronic or hand call, whatever. But you got to let the howls work. Is what happens, like me, when my buddies were hitting my spots and I get out there and they wouldn't come like usual, and I started howling, you know. But if I would start the rabbit too soon, I would see them out there. They just stop. Even though they howl back, they're coming, they would stop. Sit down, leave, bark, start barking, whatever. So you got to let the howls work for you. You got to give them time to get in there. So that makes the stands a lot louder. I mean, if you do it the way I do it, if I'm out by myself, and I know there's some coyotes out in the area, like I said before, I mean, I'll stay there, you know, 30 minutes, 45 at least. And then the plus of them answering, okay, you got some, you'll see it on my videos. I can think, there's one on YouTube, I think, Sean High and I, it was a 5 big male day or 6, whatever it is. But that day, most of them were, we howled once, some days are vocal, some days are not. Some nights are vocal, some night, don't ask me why. But you'll howl, some answered, but the ones closer come in, you shot them. Or the ones that howled, you figured they probably were the ones that come in and shot them, but you heard some other ones in a different direction or farther out, and you're done with that set, you just go to the next. But the trouble with that is, if you're in Michigan, you got to have a lot of land, permission right to hunt on. But that was one tactic, you know. We can skip ahead here, but one tactic that really works, you know, I get so many people like from Michigan or whatever. I get them to answer, but they won't come. Well, then you just got to close the distance. If you have to belly crawl 200 yards closer or whatever, you cannot believe what difference that makes. I've got several on there. I remember one, it was Sean Hyden. They were, like 750 yards. I howled and everything. With him, probably he probably howled, and they come out of the trees and they just laid down. And I tried howling different stuff, and they just laid there. You know, I'm sure it was actually on a neighbor's property on the other side of the fence way over.
Is this and one so, that had like a big cedar grove that they kept coming in and out of, or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many of them like that. I don't know, but they were laid. You could see three of them laying down.
Yep,
and we had a decoy out there. I don't know if it was Elmo or Phoebe or whatever, but. And they could see that from their vantage point. When we over there, we looked back, we were setting. And so went through rabbits, and I went through, I mean, I did the female whimpers. I was doing pup distress. I was doing everything. They just laid there. And so we got done, and I told Sean, I said, let's just sit here for a while. It's a nice day. Let's just sit here. Because my trouble is when I take even the guys I go with, I'm worried about them getting bored. You know, if I'm there by myself, I'm just staying. I'm, you know, but even like Glenn Zink and a lot of these guys, I just, the old Glenn, if he thinks it's about up, he'll just start taking the shells out of his gun. You know, well, Randy, I think we're done. You know, you don't say nothing. You just start chugging the shells out. Sean Hyden, he'll just start sighing. Big yawns. You know, well, he must think, let's go to the next spot. You know, well, if I'm there, I'm hanging on, you know. Said, let's just sit here 10 minutes. About 10 minutes goes by. They stand up. Two of them come on a run. and the big male just standing back there. There's a windmill, I remember, in line, but there was dips and crannies in there. And I seen them. The one looked like it was on a motorcycle and cleared air, you know, like going over top. They're like the motorcycle come off the ground. He was coming so hard. And then the male just took off. Well, we got a double there. But I never did a thing. I just sat there. Patience. Now, especially, this is the biggest thing for you coyote callers, patience. You've got to have patience. Don't call so much. Kind of like turkey hunting when they get educated. The less you do, the more chance you're going to have. And just and hand call more. A lot of them are going back to hand calls from the electronic where there's so much pressure. And don't blow forever, even on a rabbit. You know, if you think about it, if a rabbit is getting killed by something like an owl, a hawk, or a fox or something, you know, it's just, you know, and that's about it. Then it might get away, you know, and that's it. Just do that. Coyotes know right where you're at. Then maybe after a minute, do a little bit more. Just cut everything way down, you know. And so.
Now you've hunted fox, bobcat, coyotes, but when I talked to you the other day, you mentioned mountain lions. You have some hanging around there.
Yeah, I put five trail cams out right before this storm. I haven't checked them yet, but there was a couple of them by our trash cans. There's coyote or mountain lion crap by our well behind the house. My wife's nephew, they run bobcats all these years with hounds, and now they're treeing mountain lions all the time. Yeah, and the state's trying to get a light. They can hunt them in western Nebraska, but not right here yet. But it's coming. But I called one in. I called one in Alberta. Gary Hausman and I. Yeah. But
would you approach calling a mountain lion like you would a bobcat?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But you know, they mate any time of the year. Boy, if you got the mountain lion chirps or the, you know, in heat sound, that is what's killer. So I had it on the alpha dog, a couple different ones. And that Cabela's in Rapid City, you know, they this has been, 10, 12 years ago, probably. The alpha dog had them sounds. And one guy in Cabela's in Rapid City bought one and went out, called in a mountain lion in like 2 minutes on that female whimper thing. Mm-hmm. And they sold every one of them, and they couldn't hardly keep getting the alpha dogs fast enough. But so that's a really good sound, and it's not like a bobcat or, you know, coyote breed in February, whatever, the, you know, any time of the year. But you know, I've called some in, like I was telling you, in Arizona and around here even. And you get up, you don't know you've called one in, and if there's snow on the ground or mud or something, and you'll see their tracks on your tracks right behind you. You know, not too far. You know, they've been in, checked you out, you know. Then the one in Canada, you couldn't shoot them there either yet where we were at. They're just up by, here we go again. I can't think of it. But in southern Alberta. But you can see the mountains in the background. But there were three coyotes coming, and they were coming hard. But one by one, they stopped and turned around and left out about 300 yards. Of course, we were watching him. I'm trying to film then, and the guy next to me elbows me. Look out here, and right across front of us set a mountain lion, about a three. The Gary Hausman, he was with me, and we had the guide or the owner of the land with us. And Gary had his own a pet mountain lion for like 10, 12 years. Rode around, flew in an airplane with him. He got out these little, he flew out, he landed at these little airports in the Grand Island, Nebraska, or Manhattan, Kansas, or somewhere. He'd land there. And the thing, he'd have a leash, but he'd never even hang on to it. He'd pull up to the fuel tanks, and the mountain lion just take off with the leash dragging, go open the door with his paw, go and jump on a couch or a chair and just sit there and purr. People just freak out, you know. It was a female, about 90 mm-hmm. pounds. He had her declawed and stuff. But he knew a lot about mountain lions, you know, and he said, geez, he just couldn't get over that. But it had already picked us out. It was a little stock dam there. It was in a where they had cattle. And the ice, it was that ice on it. It was probably 140 yards, I think. But he hadn't been sitting around how long watching this. But the coyote, so then I tried, I had the alpha, I put it on like a soft deer fawn or something. Well, it just finally took off running away from us because it had us pinned down. But what we found out was interesting. You know, right in that area, the mountains are pretty close right there. And they actually, on this ranch, they made, you remember the Johnson County War, whatever, that Western with Luke Perry and what's his name? We're in at that Western Open Range, Clint Eastwood.
Oh yeah.
Several movies like that were made here. But they have the world record bighorn sheep was shot there. They've got wolves, grizzly bears, black bears, moose, elk, antelope, mule deer, white-tailed deer, you know, all this stuff. And here's these mountain lions. They just kind of started in that area just a few years. They're getting ready to, I think they could get a few permits, but and there was a few people being guided, but not too many. And they only take so many females and they cut it off. But what they found out, what these mountain lions were eating, their number one diet, you know, they were looking at the manure and everything. And they'd get one, they'd tranquilize it, and then they'd do checkup on it. The number one thing diet was coyotes. Mountain lion was living off coyotes with so many coyotes. They get in these plum thicket type things, like with the moose rub and all this, and the little swampy deals and the little game trails going through there. Lions would lay off the trail when a coyote come by, it ambush it, and because he'd find, said, well, I was fixed fence and I'd call in these plum thickets, check the wires, and here'd be three or four coyote skulls laying right there in bones. And he just figured, so that's pretty interesting. So that's probably why them three coyotes stopped when he seen that mountain lion coming in there. Yeah, same thing happened to me with a wolf in Canada. Had coyotes coming, answered coming, and the guy was doing chores. We were right behind his house. Said there's about seven coyotes every night coming in here. So it was in the morning, and he was standing on the corral fence looking. And we got up too soon because the coyotes that were in his corral, we had coming, and he heard them howl. He got out of bed. They answered me. He went out and stood on the railing and watched them. And watched them run off. Then he looked, and there's a big black wolf around the hill coming. We didn't know it, and we left. But so kind of the same thing there.
I was just going to ask you if you've ever called wolves.
Yeah, never really. Well, Worley lives where I was going to camp. It's a little bit too far south. They come about like a mountain lion come around once in a while. But when they come around, everybody gets on their CBs or now their hand, you know, their cell phones, and you got a bunch of vigilantes pushing all the trees, and they end up getting them usually. So, but Wooly, I got on one of the Verminator videos. Wooly, I ain't there, but him and his uncle Wooly shoots one with these 22-250, 50 grain VMAX, and that old big old. It's a big old looking like a German Shepherd laying on a windrow of oats or something. He get about 250 yards away. He's blowing his hand, calling the wolf, lifts his head up, just drops it down, you know, like he's wanting to sleep. So Wooly shoots him laying down. He stands up and twirls around a little bit to the left, twirls around a little bit to the right, starts tipping back and forth and falls over. That's about the only footage I got of a wolf.
So when you decide you're going to go hunting for a day, how do you like to play the wind? I mean, are you a wind in your face, crosswind, or what?
Well, when I'm filming, you know, that's the whole thing. You know, you ain't going to get much footage or anything at all. You can't see the downwind hunting, or with, especially with a camera. So with cameras, a lot of times it pretty much makes you too vulnerable with a camera. Because if you can't, you just waste your time if you can't see the downwind. So you end up setting in places because you want to get the footage on each side of the ridge or whatever. So, you know, you've got, normally if you didn't have a camera, okay, you go over that hill, I'll go over this hill and spread out and whatever. But with the camera is always tough. But so a crosswind, a little bit, well, if it's straight into you, they can go either way. They can go left or they can go right. But you can use that to your advantage, you know. So if you're by yourself and you can't, it can be hard, the place you want to get, you can't see over this little knob or little patch of trees in a way. By using crosswinds, you can get them coming right into your wheelhouse, you know, play it that way. You want them to cut, like if you're, say you're a football field, you're over where the players are, and say you're on the 50-yard line, and the wind's coming from the left pylon to your left opposite side to the right pylon on your side, just crisscross across the field. Well, when you're blowing the call, you know, if they're way to the left goalpost, they're kind of going to come towards you and probably end up around the 30, 40-yard line swinging in, maybe right out in front of you. If there's coyotes right in front of you, they're going to end up clear over about the goal line, coming around right up your sideline. If there's some through them goalposts, you'll never see them because they're coming around, they'll smell you, and they're gone. So that's kind of what That's kind of what I use at seminars. So, but you can use that to your advantage. And then what I got to doing in the sandhills are terrible, you know, because there's a lot of them. Some of them like little shark ones and stuff. And so we got to using two cameras, and sometimes we'd be 100 to 200 yards away. The downwinders would be, they wouldn't even know I'm calling. They could not even hear me if a little bit of wind was blowing. They'd be downwind, and all of a sudden we'd be calling, all of a sudden, boom, you'd hear the shots. Or we, you know, because I was seeing them a half mile out in front of me with a, say, a 10, 15 mile an hour wind, and they would start circling. We would have to get up and run when they get behind something, a hill, or in the lowest, but we'd run to the next hill, and sometimes that wasn't far enough. They circled that much. That's how much they circled, and that's why, you know, if you're out in your country where it's so thick, that's why it's hard calling them in the daytime so much, because there's usually a little wind, and they're not, you're not seeing them. They're smelling. They're getting around on you. A lot of guys sit together, which I wouldn't recommend. You know, you want to be safe. You want to know where the other guy is, you know. But I mean, no way would I ever set right together with anybody, your buddy. You need to spread out. Use the wind, and even if you're doing shotguns, whatever. But that's the hardest thing about hunting a coyote, you know. So, but I just for thinking, you know, I did get one with a bow and arrow. And we got a couple, I think, or one on that video with bow and arrow. You know, that was my first video. I was advertising it. We hadn't even got one. And it wasn't that. We just kind of lucked out. Took two spots and got the second spot worked out, because that's what we did. We just found a trail. And coyotes, even if there's no trees, there's cow trails or game trails, they'll come on them trails.
Yep.
They'll winder all around if they just went straight, you know, and they'll just stay on them trails. And that's how you can work coyotes too, especially in like in brushy areas. You know, we would, you know, we'd shoot coyotes in the trees, but you can't hardly see them. You know, that's why I never film. Nebraska's got a lot of thick cover and stuff, you know, and always say, well, yeah, he's out there in the wide open. Well, shoot, we got all kinds of trees. You know, and so we just use shotguns and get off a trail about 15, 20 yards and just call, but you wouldn't call much because you could hear their feet like a deer. You could hear them coming. Just raise your shotgun up and they'd run right in your barrel right on that trail. We didn't, you know, like CRP, you know, where the big tall grass program. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just even get out in it, get on a good trail where a couple of trails come together. Just call a little bit and get your call and wait. You all of a sudden, there they are, boom, with the old 12 gauge.
So on the wind topic, do you notice when you're using howls versus a distress sound? Like, do you notice coyotes circle farther to distress than they do to vocals?
I think so. Okay. Yeah. Unless you're, like, say, if I'm doing an older male challenge or something, you know, then sometimes the ones coming that are maybe not as intimidating, they might circle a little bit. But you know, I talked about my sounds. They're all out in the field. You know, a lot of your sounds you're getting with some of these companies are pinned in coyotes. You know, they're eating Elpo every day, or they're doing roadkill off the road, a dead rabbit or deer leg, you know, then they start howling, you know, and you got them in different cages and you put them in with each other and they fight around and all that. But my sounds are all out in the field. They're, you know, when I howl, oh, I'll give you an example. Wooly and I were hunting in the fog. It was terrible fog. We just sat in the house all day. You could see about 80 yards. We went out and had quite a few coyotes answering, and it was just one fairly deep pitched voice was challenging me. That was the closest one. It's on a video. So I took the little dog and I was humming in it. You know, and it would go. And we're just going back and forth. It was getting closer. We couldn't see it. It was open country. Couldn't see it. And then finally, it comes out of the fog there and we shoot it. And it was just a young male pup. You know, just from that spring. We're hunting there in October. It was born that spring. You know, and so we've got the challenge owl, and what I do with challenge owls, you know, in that first stage, or you can do the first stage. Well, I never even finished up my three stages. We just talked about the first stage, but we'll continue. And then I'll tell you about the other two for sure. But the first stage, then you can kind of go to challenge owls. You can challenge, you know, and just wait. then do a higher pitch, change calls, or get on a tip of the reed. That's all you do, you know, and just wait. And boy, I mean, that'll work. Then you get vocal. If they're vocal at night with you, I know in Michigan, you're going to get many to howl at daytime. Let's be right at first light or right when the sun's going down. But at night, you know, and in South Africa, them guys, I was calling jackals, and they hunt all at night and back at the pickup. This guy is all he ever did. They're mating, and I was howling up jackals. He couldn't believe it. This guy was a pro, and I was howling up jackals with challenge howls. They were breeding just like a coyote. I would mimic back fight, and he'd be right up 20 yards in front of the pickup in the lights and shoot him. Same way in Texas. At night, you know, all they ever do in Texas on them shows, it's all distress sounds, you know, for bobcat, coyote. I was howling them in at night just to prove I could do it. That's on one of the videos, a little bit of it. But them challenge howls really work. Work good around a dead carcass. Like if you're hunting coyotes around a dead carcass, works good mating season, you know. So you've got that tool. You can do that in stage one, too, after you interrogate the area. You know, if you just want to do something else, then you have the old mating thing, the female invitation, you know. And I've heard that where I lived for about 14 years on the river. You know, on my older videos, I used to show our place there and had the dog chasing the coyotes and shot the one off the step at 400, 500 yards, whatever it was, you know, and remember that spot. But that was kind of a runway from South Dakota to Nebraska. There was a river and stuff, and they just kind of a runway when the mating season, the coyotes were moving. You know, coyotes sometimes move hundreds of miles, you know, and stuff during that time of year. It's been done, you know, with the collars and stuff, tracking coyotes just move like you can't believe. People don't realize that, but any, after they disperse and stuff, they just keep getting kicked out of an area and whatever. But anyways, I'd lay at night in the bedroom and the old wife snoring away. And I cracked a window, even though it was cold out, and I could hear them females in January, February. Just, you know, for an hour, 2 hours, just, then all of a sudden she shut up. So I don't know if she got tired of waiting or she went to find another male or whatever. So that really, I mean, that between my interrogation howl and my female invitation howl, them are the two I do of all. I got all real coyote howls except them two and I think a domain howl. But them three, out of all the howls I got, them three worked the best. Just me blowing it's me blowing the hot dog and the little dog and the diaphragm call. And them three work the best. I mean, I don't know why. It's hand calls. And, you know, and I should say, you know, Fox Pro kind of come out with the first electronic caller that kind of interests me, the little flashlight one, you know. And then you could download sounds, you know, on there. So I bought one. And the only reason I bought one was to prove to people that you could put a hand call on a electronic caller and it would work just as good as real. Everybody's crazy. Oh, it's got to be real. It's got to be a real rabbit. It's got to be real. This. So I just blew a tally ho for rabbit. And I blew, well, that's before I had my sounds or my calls yet. But I blew, I think it was the Austin Howler and a few, and a tally ho and stuff. It did just a handful of sounds. And I went out there just so that was on that, Calling Coyotes 2 video, I think. But I sat on my shooting bench, I remember, and I had that. So many people seen that, and they're wanting my sounds, you know, wanting them just hand call sounds of mine. So I called Fox Pro, and they were trying to, well, so I figured out, I got a few real sounds and stuff, but I had 16-pound sound package. And so Fox Pro said, well, shoot, we might as well just, if you want, I wanted to be a dealer of their calls. I said, yeah, so I, so they said, well, we won't sell your calls. They can't get the caller unless they buy the caller from you to get your sounds. So, man, I sold lots of them. So, and then I had a sound package as I got more and had a website. And so I always had them 16 sound packages. So that's kind of, and then Fox Pro had, they called me an honorary pro staffer. I think I was the only one that had that title. And out of all that, they gave me one caller. But anyway, So then Primo, you know, I kind of got with Primo there, you know, and after Will had me come down there and wined and dined me and we got a deal. And then I started filming for them too. You know, and I'd make my video, and I make a Primo's video every year. I mean, how in the world they ever do it? But so then Primo, so I had nothing to do with it. They come out with this power dog call. It actually worked good, sounded good for the price and everything. And they put them some of them sounds on there, but the remote would lose its power after a while. So pretty soon you had to keep getting the collar closer to you. And because they sent a couple to me to try, and I told them, I said, well, we took it out hunting. Yeah, it works great for about a week or two, but then pretty soon you can't even use the remote. You just set it beside you and run it manually. Well, they went ahead and sold it anyway, because it was kind of come, it was on its way being built as I come in with Primos. So I was my own dealer. That was kind of good too. I got to be my own dealer, selling Tallyhos and Rick Paulette's Thumper Tweedy and them and Psycho Tweedy, and I was selling all that stuff, and the Austin calls and Dan Thompson calls and all this, and then my own calls that I was getting royalty on. Plus, I was making the dealership on them too, so I was getting paid twice. So, it was working pretty good. But I told Will, asked me about, well, you're using Foxtrot. Well, yeah, I said, till you guys get something halfway decent, I'll keep using. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't know. You're probably right. I'll have to get a fire under me. So I was with Primos and Fox Pro for a few years there, until then Primos came out with the Alpha Dog. So I thought, well, then I told Fox Pro I better probably quit. They've got something now kind of competitive. I did a seminar at Fox Pro's headquarters. They flew me in there and I did a seminar. People were flying. Remember those guys flew in from, I don't know, New Jersey or West Virginia, I forget, or was a couple different people that flew in just to see me there. But, well, that's a little more history. You guys are into the history, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we like hearing all this stuff.
And full of crap mostly. But
so if you were to go out calling tomorrow, do you still use a mix of hand calls and e-calls? Do you use more of one versus the other?
I just love hand calling so much. And the reason, you know, I got to use them probably on the video too much electronic, but you know, they were wanting to sell these Alpha Dogs and stuff and they were good. So I got a little more heavy on that just for the selling part of it, you know, to move the calls for them. And so they still send me around stuff, but no, I always use hand call. What I do usually, I'll, cause like I said, them howls I do with them hand calls work better than real coyote howls. And I've got lots of real coyote howls. I mean, you know, that I have a pup serenade that's just unbelievable. And it's not the quality. You know, some of my sounds aren't the greatest quality to the human ear because I'm out in wind and stuff. I'm not in a dog kennel behind the house with pinned in coyotes and waiting for a perfect day to do it. I'm out there and I'm sitting underneath some cottonwood trees with the leaves still on them and the wind's blowing. And I howl at a kid with me. He was a 7th or 8th grader. It's on a video. Probably that second one, Sky Higgins from Napier, Nebraska. And he's got a big feedlot now. But anyways, I blew the hot dog call, whatever. Three howl or four interrogation. It wasn't a minute. Three pups. Well, this would have been October, so they were born that spring. So they come up on a knob about 70 yards away. And they howl this long serenade. It's called Pup Serenade. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great. I see, you know, it's kind of funny. I watch every once in a while, I watch some shows on some of them outdoor channels. It's somebody that's promoting some other call, whatever, because I had my calls for sale at one time. You could buy them from me for like $2 or something ridiculous. And I'd hear them sounds on their callers. They're trying to sell their callers using my sounds. And one of them was. One was this, and they were in Oklahoma, and all they ever played was my Jackrabbit, and that's Pup Serenade. But it's a great sound. But them coyotes, you know, they come up and howl right there, and it's rattling in the trees, so I don't have the greatest sound. I do a lot. I took it to a guy at a college professor that did the best he could on it. But that thing has just been unbelievable, though. That's a real sound that really worked. But you know, and I have a sound of a real coyote. I'm with Wooly, I think. And I howl as soon as they like one or two howls and there's a young female up on a hill about 350 yards away. And he's answering me. And it's, so I call it the female answer how. Young female answer how. And so then, well, Willie, of course, he's wanting to shoot it already. He's getting in long range. No, we're trying to sell calls. Let's call it in. Well, pretty soon it spins around and looks like parallel to us. And it howls again, just like an invitation. Willie goes, look it to the right. Here comes one of the biggest males ever shot, two trailing it on the dead run right in that little valley. And then that's all we did and shot it. But and then, you know, so it's just, I have my male challenge on the real coyote. It works good too, but I howled, and the younger male come out and shot it, kept howling. Here the old male comes out ripping up the ground, shoot, and it tears the ground up and everything, urinates by the dead one. Roar! I howl back. Roar! Boom, we shoot that one. So I mean, you know, I'm sure them sounds out of kennels, they probably were just as good, but I'm just saying my calls, I'm interacting with the coyotes, you know. And the coyote, one more, the coyote serenade had that directional mic, and I think this might have been with Wooly too, but I howled, and a mile away, three coyotes come up over a hill in the snow, and they sat down, I think a couple lay down, and I howled, I can't remember what I did, but they stood up then, and they did a serenade, and that's my coyote serenade here, and it sounds like they're close, but they're a mile away. And then I challenged them, and I think it was a female invitation. No, it was a challenge owl. And two of them just took off and come all the way in. He shot them both. And the other one never did move. But so I don't know. I go on and on and on. So then after all this howling baloney, then we go to step phase two, which is stage two, and that's just your distresses. So I'll usually go at least 10 minutes waiting or howling, or maybe go into it longer, depending on how the coyotes react or what the tracks look like or what. So and how many scrapes are around there, you know, for the coyotes and piles of crap and all that. And then I'll go into the distress, rabbit, bird, whatever, you know, and I've never been one to just let it run unless we're doing bobcats. You might as well just let the son of a gun run. Just keep changing sound as much as you want. More you change sounds of bobcats, more they're coming in. I've seen it so many times. Coyotes out there, 300 yards are on the dead run for the first 100 yards. They stop, then they trot, then they sit on their butt, and move 5 feet every 5 minutes, keep changing this, that, whatever. But coyotes, I normally just start out with a little longer, a hand call or electronic, you know, for, you know, a good 45 seconds, half or 30 seconds, 45, then just keep trimming it down and waiting more. Until I get about 10 minutes. And I might switch from a jackrabbit to a baby jackrabbit or something, or a bird or something a little bit. But then nothing shows up. Then I go to stage three, which is that kai-ai sound like I talked about. When I shot the one in the butt, the other one come up. I'll do that or the pup distress. And then pup distress, you know, just higher pitch and hum more in it, a little gruff, you know, whatever. That's where that kai-ai call works so good. You take the head off that. That's quite the call, actually, that kai-ai call. You take the head off it and move that rubber band up and down on it. Man, you could – that's. I've had coyotes come in and, like a dog, just kind of tilt their head back and forth. And they just kind of – you know, then they come, take off. But so pup distress, some of that. And then, of course, now, you know, you can do this, like, more of a coyote fight, something like that. But, I mean, you can – like, and if you're going to an area that you know has been hammered, just – you know, I always still howl. But I'll probably just totally skip stage two. No prey sounds at all. Just go right into kai-ais, coyote fights, whatever. Or just really call, just, you know, just start out right with pup distress and a few howls, challenge howl, whatever. But so stage one, stage two, stage three. Every once in a while, you'll get a coyote come in after all the ruckus you've done in an hour or more calling, like where we can see more out here. Oh, man, there's a coyote. He comes and peeks over the hill looking. Then he just lays down. I go to a rabbit, and he just comes on the dead run. And probably just a coyote that's moved in and never heard a lot of that other, or he just got tired, got sick and tired. What is going on over there?
I was going to ask you, Randy, do you do much locating? I mean, do you drive around and try
to
locate?
No. No, because just educating them right there. I've had them run right in a ditch, standing on the road, howling to get them to answer. You know, they can be coming. They don't just howl. Like I said, why would you want to go out and howl and then have them running right at you? Then they're shot. They come right up to your vehicle at night. then they run off. You know, you're going back the next day, you know, you've already messed with them a little bit. But I mean, if you're clear out in some area where there's not a lot of calling, like in Utah or something, I mean, some big ranch, I suppose you could do it, but you don't want to do it a lot. You end up educating them. But where you're in a place where there's hardly any coyotes, I could see maybe where, you know, there's not much sign of a coyote at any, you know, not much tracks or scat or anything. I could see maybe there you might want to try to educate some. But now, like I said, some nights they won't even howl.
Mm-hmm.
And other nights mm-hmm. they just light up all day long. You can, you know, so it, I don't know why that is. Yeah. But I don't, because I run into that several times. We have enough coyotes around here, and, you know, and I know where to go here. Been doing it 57 years, boys. Calling coyotes for 57 years. So I kind of know the good spots by now. So, you know, right. And you know, that's, but if I'm somewhere else, you know, as we get there, you know, as we're doing the sets, you know, well, man, I don't see any many tracks here. Let's go on the other side of the highway over here. If I'm in New Mexico or somewhere, and let's go where the juniper trees are, where it's more rough, or, you know, just tell you, if you're there 3 or 4 days, and you kind of narrow it down and stuff, then I might do more, a little of that stuff. But it just works too good. You know, a lot of guys, like I said, people just don't. I see there's a one of the celebrities now actually has howling, which ran me down for years. Wouldn't howl, says stupid and whatever. And I see now they've got a howler they're selling. So they're finally waking up, I guess, a little bit.
I love howling because, honestly, I could sit and listen to coyotes howl and be happy.
Yeah. Well, like, okay, last year, I got my alpha dog set on a shooting stick tripod in a pasture, looks like a golf course, overgrazed. We had a drought. And I have to go repair a dam in the summer, but I'm there about, this is probably in February or something. There was no snow. And it was windy. I was going to just go down this pasture about a mile, look at this dam, give the guy an estimate. Well, shoot, I might as well call. This is stupid. There's just no trees, no nothing. It's just, there's a river about 2 miles away, you see trees. So I sit out there and it's windy. And I set the alpha dog on this trigger stick about, right, 30 yards in front of me, and it's just a slope up to a hill, so I'm sure I'm silhouetted, and it's kind of cold, and I turn the alpha dog on the interrogation howl, and on howls on electronic collars I always shut the loop off. I don't want them to loop back, and a lot of times, you know, I pause on the howl, one howl, and I pause it a while. You know, just tips for some of you, just don't let it go, you know, all the time, even on a howl.
Mm-hmm.
Mess it up, mix it up, maybe only do one howl of this, skip to another one, do one howl, whatever. But I turned it on. It's about 45 to 50 seconds. I had just three howls on there. So I turn it on. It's windy. What am I setting here for? Oh, well, might as well try it. And I look down, grab my stocking hat or my face net, take my hat off, put it on, put my hat on, put my gloves on. It's on about the end of the second howl. I had it on 100, wide open, just windy. And I look up, and there's a coyote 5 yards from it looking at it. Wide open on 100 volume. So then wow. I go to shoot, and I didn't have my trigger or my sticks up. I went to shoot off my elbow on my knee. Right as I shot, my elbow kind of slipped off my knee a little bit, and I missed it. And then I did the old Randy Anderson, "Arr!" stopped it right as it went over the hill, and they shot it. But that, and nice. I did the same thing this spring, scout for turkey, exactly the same thing, only it was one howl on the edge of a cornfield. I was looking to take some turkey hunters, might as well make a stand, turned it on, looked down for a little bit, didn't need a face net or gloves, it was warm, looked up, and there he is right on the edge of the field, standing looking. I had peewee out there, my decoy, and he come a little farther, and I shot it, one howl, you know. So
I've heard you mention your decoys a lot. Do you use them that much? Is it something you use on a regular basis?
Yeah, when I use it if it's not too hard to carry. If you got 2 foot of snow, or, you know, but mainly I never really used the coyote decoys until later in the year when coyotes get smarter. And then around here we have a lot of greyhound hunters. Really bad now. Well, not bad, but I mean, it's just there's a lot of them. They're into it a lot. It's getting to be like the breeding thing. You know, they're raising coyote, you know, greyhounds to chase the coyotes. They got the coyote, the box in the back of the pickup with now sometimes four or five, six coyote head or dog greyhounds or heads sticking out. They get out in the pasture, start driving around. Their pickups are all jacked up. We've got nice smooth shocks, air shot, all this crap. So they just chase him coyotes. So they come to his fence and stop and let the dogs out. Who let the dogs out? And then, then away they go. And then, well, then all the coyotes end up in all the groves, the trees along the rivers and stuff, you know, the ones that get away. So, but a lot of times, you know, you can howl. The rabbit call will get nothing in usually. So you got to, or prey sound. So you just kind of get out there within, or, you know, 100, 200 yards away from the grove before you do anything. Lay on your belly, whatever, howl, and they'll leave. And if you use that decoy, a lot of times if you don't, they'll howl, they'll come out a little bit, look around, then you go right back in the trees. So then if you have that coyote decoy, they'll make them come out a little bit maybe. Every once in a while, okay, you come run right at it. But, you know, so that's why. But you can – I've used them during the middle of the year and stuff just to see what they do. And it makes a difference. Yeah. Huh. What it does mainly, like that – the I call it peewee, the one I've been using the last 3-4 years. But it'll – the ones that are coming 100 mile an hour, them kamikaze ones, you know, that maybe you guys don't get out there so much. But
oh, we get
it. But, I mean, they'll slow them down. They'll finally stop and look – or – but come right up to them and jump right over top of them, spin around, bark at them or whatever, you know, if they don't smell them, you know, because you can smell the decoy. You got to watch that, you know. But don't let them get around behind if it's a crosswind. You shoot them before they might take off. Or, you know, when they come, sometimes, you know, they would probably come closer using a coyote decoy, but it'll stop them in range, so just shoot them. You know, like within 100 yards or something, it'll make them stop to really look and crane their neck around, you know. And so, but they don't really hurt you. Yeah.
I've hunted with a guy that used them a couple times, and I think one time we had good success with it. Other times, I don't even think we called in coyotes. So it's one thing.
Well,
we get people that ask about it a lot.
So probably maybe it wouldn't have made any difference if you had one there or not. You wouldn't have called one in anyway, too. come on now,
right?
See, that's what here's what people are. I won't name them, but I got a couple of guys I go with. They're so superstitious. Like, try this call, you know. Well, there's a new one. They try it, and it works the first time, and they just can't. They always got to use it, whether they're calling one in or not, you know. And they don't want to try a new call. If they try it once or twice, nothing comes in, they never use it again, you know. And so, you know, I run into that all the time. Folks, there's got to be one there, and they ain't going to hear it if you don't blow it loud enough, too. You know, a lot of guys are worried about volume. Jeez, I just can't hammer on them calls. They ain't hearing it. They ain't coming. So let's get them coming. So,
yep. Makes sense.
Well, I've had coyotes and bobcats. Like I said, volume on 100. Jackrabbit. You know. Bobcat sitting right by it, coyote standing there, like looked like he's riding a motorcycle. The hair on his head's blowing backwards. That's right, and just standing right there looking at it. So, coyote callers are always worried about why they didn't come. And I know a guy that I've been with him lots of times. He's done it, he's been with me. You know, howl them in. There they come on the run, howl them in. But one time we were spread apart a little bit. And he was just over the knob, and I could see him, so I could see him, and I could see what he was going to shoot at using. It was on a lake, a little lake, a dam. They'd have to come across the ice. And there was one coming on the ice, and let's see, what was the deal? Oh, he was using a start out with a rabbit call maybe or something for some reason. I think maybe we'd seen one up in the hills, so I'm just going to try a rabbit, didn't howl. And this one was coming when I didn't see it coming yet. I wasn't looking that way. And I did a howl, and that thing turned around, took off running. He never did howl again after that. Oh, it scared him off. Oh. Scores of times he's sitting there when we howled him in. But just superstitious, you know. Probably was a coyote seeing him or some reflection or whatever. I don't know. But you can't base everything on one set, folks.
Right.
Yep. Never give up.
Never give up. No, you say that at the end of most of your videos.
That's right.
Randy, do you have any regrets taking your coyote hunting the way you did? I mean, instead of just hunting to hunt, do you have any regrets putting it in mainstream in front of a bunch of people, anything?
No, I mean, I just, you know, I really didn't ever plan on it. You know, I was doing a few hunts there, you know, and then I got a few and got more. Well, here was, I could never even told the main story. There was, you know, where you have Shield stores in Michigan or not?
Nope.
They're out of Minnesota, but there's quite a few in these states, in Iowa, South Dakota, Nebraska and stuff. They're a big store. They're all sports. They have a lot of hunting and stuff. Mm-hmm. There was one in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And I always went there for parts, you know, for my earth moving equipment and stuff after I bought it from Dad. And so I go to the Shield store, and my wife and I always went the day before Christmas. We always like going the day before Christmas to shop, either our do our last Christmas shopping. Of course, this place is packed. Well, they had just, all these companies like Primos, Realty, they all started coming out with these videos and end caps and TVs all over. Shields was probably the first place that really used the TVs, even before Cabela's. They had a big TV, big screen one in the gun department, and they had a deer hunt on there. The TV was right there. Of course, then you just had the VCR, and you're using a VCR tape. And so I had a few of these hunts. I had about, that's one without 300 Weatherby, about half, most of them hunts. And nobody was looking. There was people all over, and I ejected their deer tape, and I stuck my raw coyote tape in there. I wouldn't be talking to you right now if I wouldn't have done that. It's amazing. And pretty soon, people just started crowding around that TV. And I kind of made it a little more like, more action, not so much, you know, a little retrieval, a little calling, boom, next one, you know, just kind of like that. Kept it moving. Fur, and I was using that 300 Weatherby, and the fur was just flying off them coyotes. Them guys, you know, holy crap, rewind it. How do you rewind it? And then well, it was drawing such a crowd, it was blocking the aisle. This was the day before Christmas. So the boss is going around. He finally, hey, folks, let's move it on now. We're blocking the aisle. Then he started watching it. Then he hollered at the guys. They're asking, can you buy this video? And they want, I don't know. And so, well, did you put that in? No, I don't know. Where'd that come from? And I'm saying, oh, that's mine. What? That's yours? Yeah, I just playing around with the coyotes. And that's where it started. So then every year, this was like early 90s. So every year I'd come back, Anderson, you got some more of them? Yeah, put them in. You ought to sell this. So that went on for about 4 or 5 years till finally, you know, and I had about 30, 40 kills. So that's kind of all I did fine. My wife, I mean, she pushed me. I wouldn't have done it. Man, we had to make some Christmas shopping money. I wonder how much you'd make on these. Well, geez, we were getting $25 a video back then. And it cost me about, four and a half a video back then. And yes. Another year went by and I didn't do nothing. Then I got the letter from Rick Paulette with that tape in there. So then that spurred me on. Let's make another one, Randy. So then we make another one. remember on that one, we do our little, that's what I took when I went to Primos. It's Will Primos, Jimmy Primos, and all their big shots in the conference room, and they had a TV in there up in the corner. And they put that video in, and I went down there to meet Will Primos. And, of course, them guys are kind of like I am. You know, they're kind of redneck a little bit and all that. And they just laugh so hard. I'm playing that trumpet and everything, you know. And at the end, right after that deal where we blow the bobcat up on that video, Rick and I, he said, I'm Rick Paulette. I'm Randy Anderson. We're the Verminators. And we go, talk to you later. And Rick sticks his finger like, talk to you later. I look at him and then I stick my finger laid out there like that. And so that was always talk to you later, you know. So that was kind of everybody got to doing that. And then I come out with a song, you know. Yeah, and I did that. I was Glenn Zink, my neighbor, actually, you know, he's hunting with me on all these videos, you know, he was my neighbor. And farm, next farm up the hill from me, about a mile and a half or so. And we were driving around one day, and he knew I was about to come up. Do you have a song for it? And he knew I was a musician and taught music and stuff. And I said, nah, I've never wrote a song. So, well, come up. So I come up with that song. And we had not a napkin, but just a piece of paper. And we were going down the road, and I was trying to make up words. And I have that part in there where, dear Lord, I hope it's a sin for him to come in downwind. I hope he knows it's a sin to come in. And that was Glenn. That was Glenn's line there. But so then I wake up the next morning and I could not, of course, like I am now. I've always had dementia, whatever. And I read Moby Dick in high in school, and I couldn't even remember what it was. I just had that memory problem my whole life, but I couldn't think of the tune. And I, what in the world was that tune? So I come up with a whole different tune than what it was going to be. So. But yeah, it's pretty funny.
I imagine that song being written on one of those hour and a half long stands where you haven't seen anything.
Yeah. 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 And then I, to do it, the guys from Sioux Falls, where I was having my videos made there, Dakota Video and Post, Kurt Friesen, that was his name that got me started, you know, and all this. But he sent me, it was down to Sioux City, knew a guy, kind of a hippie. It was in South Sioux City, Nebraska. He had a recording studio in his basement. It was pretty good. And so I go, I go down there and I start down the steps in the basement. The guy starts sniffing. Boy, I've smelled that smell before, you know. And it was, I mean, well, yeah, that was in the dormitories at Wayne State College. There was a little incense going on, wacky weed, whatever. But, yeah, he'd probably been up a windmill before. But anyways, I started out playing the acoustic guitar. That's all me on there. Acoustic guitar. And then I sang the lead. Then I sang three-part harmony. I sang the baritone and the tenor. Then I played drums. I played bass, lead guitar. Then the coyote call. Did all that. That's all me, one-man band. And I remember when I took it up to Sioux Falls after I was done with it, that Kurt Friesen, he heard that for the first time. He said, I cannot believe that. What, you wrote that? That's you and all that? Yeah. That's the only song I ever wrote. And that's the only one I ever wrote since. I've never wrote another one. You know? And then he got me an interview on Kickin' 100. It's their big country western station out of Sioux Falls. It's big. We even get it here. We're 3.5 hours from Sioux Falls. And they'd play that on every once in a while. Some guy goes, hey, play that coyote hunting song. So he'd play it. And then they played it in a few radio stations around here for a while. Yeah. So then they had that cartoon. But if you look on Facebook, I haven't on there much, but I'm starting up again. Randy Anderson, Coyote Caller. I just kind of put a post. But a while back, you can go back a little bit. I put that cart. There's a coyote hunter out of Chicago that's a cartoonist.
Yep.
What's his name? Crap, I can't think of it. But
we know him.
Spike Davis.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, he's got that cartoon. Yeah, try to find that cartoon. Well, it's on that Facebook, but it's mom and dad coyote in bed in the middle of the night. She's got her little night hat on, and they're laying there asleep, and it goes, what's the matter, honey? You still hearing that song of Come Little Coyote in your dream or whatever? Yeah,
we recorded a podcast with Tim Davis not too long ago.
Yeah, I just got three cartoons from him today and said Merry Christmas.
Nice. He's That's a good cool. guy, too.
Yep.
Well, Randy, I want to personally thank you because, like I said a couple times, you watching your video is what really lit the fire underneath me. And anytime I get questions, because we get people messaging us all the time about coyote vocals and stuff like that. Yeah. It's about 99% of the time I refer them to your YouTube videos talking about howling. That's how I learned to do it. So I just want to personally say thank you for being the guy that you really did light a fire that you didn't even know was burning.
Yeah, I would like to know how many people started because watching my videos. There'd just be thousands of people, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I get it all the time, you know.
We asked the question on our page on Facebook of who you would like to have us bring on as a guest. And I think you were one of the ones that was asked for more than anybody else.
Yeah. Until now. Now they won't want to. Hey, you know, remember that you talked about that seminar at Jay's Sporting Goods?
Yes, sir.
Which one were you at, the first one or the second one?
It's been a while. I don't even
know. You know, I had to do it again. Well, the guy that managed the store's son, he had a buddy, and they just started calling coyotes. They were on the front row and they were just watching me, you know. And like I said, that place was packed.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty big seminar. It'd be couple hundred at least people.
Yep.
They were standing all the way around, some on the edge of the stage. During my seminar, I did it, and then there was just as many almost people out in the store waiting. And, well, they had a screen. I remember now. They had a screen set up. They had a set of screens set up and film me But the people were standing out in the store watching it. And then more people showed up. And then I had to do it again. They had not quite as many, but that many. But the manager of the store, his boy and his buddy, were sitting there. They're in high school. They went out right after that first semester or seminar. And they come back for the after just as the second seminar was ending. And they called in a coyote howling and come right up. And they and two coyotes. And that kid's buddy shot both coyotes with one shot.
Really?
Yep. Yeah, I never forget that. Yeah, that was there. They That's did a little cool. test. That probably helped sell all them calls. I was telling. It was just a rush for them.
Right.
There wasn't a call left in the store or nothing.
But, yeah. No, it was a good seminar, and yeah, it's just been cool to learn from somebody like you that's got so much experience, and I think you've taught a lot of people, like you said, that you don't even know. There's a lot of people that you've helped, and so thank you very much.
Well, you know, and a lot of people called. You know, I get them to howl, and I can't get them to come in, you know, and all this. But it depends a lot. It's hard for me to know. I've got to be there. I've got to see what's going on. I got to see what you're talking about, the area, what the, you know, where your setup is. And all. I mean, there's so much to it. And I could talk here for another 2 hours. You know, it's just my seminars, you know, I always use quite a bit of footage, you know, because just standing up there with a, you know, and do, you know, slides and this and that, not, you know, but when you do a video parts, you know, where something unique happens or showing them exactly what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what you'll see if you come to the seminar. It's not going to be there, you know, telling a bunch of stories like I am now. It's going to be why I do it, what works, and you'll see it working. And you'll see exactly, and I'll demonstrate them calls, really get in depth of demonstrating them. I would never win any coyote calling, like on stage calling. I'm sure a lot of guys could play blow calls better than me, but you don't have to. You don't have to be a world champion caller on a stage. You just need to know what'll bring them in. And you know, that's all I do. I don't claim to be some great hand caller or anything.
Yeah. So. Kevin?
And one more thing. You asked about what kept me going. Did I ever think I'd make 24 videos, be on the Outdoor Channel and, you know, go all over the country and, you know, but I mean, it's just one video. They just keep calling me up. Randy, you've got two. You're going to make another one? Oh, I don't know. You know, and it's just as I was starting to do a few seminars, everybody wanted another one. That's why I kept doing it. Wasn't so much for me. Shoot, it got to be, you know, it getting harder to do every year. More people, some idiot put this video out showing everybody how to call coyotes. So now I'm trying to, geez, I got to quit telling them what I'm doing locally, you know. But I'll tell you one more story. Rick, the Verminator, Mr. Lucky Duck and I were at Las Vegas. Ricky, he's just a character. And we went out there because Dakota Archery in Vermilion, South Dakota, or Yankton, South Dakota, they have Ted Nugent come every year and hunt there and talk on a radio station and everything. But Bruce Call was his name. He was the head of the World Archery Shoot in Las Vegas and every year. And so he had me come. I said, man, tore this casino down. It was the Riviera Hotel Casino. They had a big, way up in the upper story, had this great big banquet area where they, like, big stage, like, they'd have shows, like, you know, like Wayne Newton or Elvis Presley or something, you know, big. But the tables down front, the balconies and all that, and X out there where you stand on the stage. He said, I want you, at this convention, I want you to go out and just do your coyote song. And then just do a little, show a hunt or two, and just show, you know, how you can hunt coyotes with a bow. Was it, ain't this like the, how many of these are deer of hunters? Oh, probably, there'll be like 4,000 there. And he said probably half of them would be hunters. The other half are from China and Germany, and they're Olympic shooters and, you know, maybe anti, but I don't care. We'll just, and David Sims was his name. Laboratories, whatever. They're the ones that make
labs.
Yeah, they make all the weighting rubber weights for tennis rackets, bow and arrows. Limb Saver. Yeah, yep. He was hosting the whole thing. And so, here comes Randy Anderson here. He's going to show you how to call in a coyote. So I go out there and I sit on the X where Wayne Newton and Elvis Presley stands. Come, little coyote, come. You know, and then I got done. They all clapped, you know. And see, and I never knew Primos yet. This was before Primos. It's like 2000, year 2000 or something. And so Primos had a table, you know, they're pretty big, you know, so they had a table down there, about six, seven big round tables, and they were right down front, and I didn't know it. So then I was going to show two hunts, and I got to thinking, oh man, why did I even pick this hunt? It's with Rick. Rick's in Kansas, and kind of a hotter day, and he's down his kind of a draw with just a few trees. It's on the Bowmania video. And this old coyote just comes walking in, of course, he's doing the old lip streak. He's shooting the old muzzy broadhead and the great big old aluminum arrows he used to shoot, you know, heavier arrows. That thing's like 15 yards walking right into it. There's a great big yucca plant right next to it. Thunk, right above the right eye. Thunk. And he's spinning around with that arrow sticking out of his head. And blood running down his face. Then he starts trying. He keeps running his head into the arrow into that big yucca plant. Finally, it falls over and it's kicking its right leg like kick, 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 kick. And he's dead. Well, about 400 people get up and walk out. And really? Sims, yeah, I wasn't quite done with my little seminar. And Sims comes out there. Oh, folks, that's okay. Yeah, that might have been just a little graphic. And we're sorry. Well, next we have. So kind of crowded me off of there. And so that I had a booth there at that show. Me and Rick were sitting there selling our calls and whatever and videos. And these people come by, you know, from Korea or somewhere, even not even just, you know, we were so disturbed. We couldn't even sleep last night, you know, and all this stuff.
Oh, we hear stuff like that all the time.
Then I got to tell one more, you know, we're in Las Vegas and they had that Gillies there. Like you do in Texas where you ride the bowl, you know, that big bar thing, dancing, two-stepping. So we went, but we didn't go at night. We went in the afternoon. They were giving dancing lessons and everything. The bowl was there. Every once in a while, somebody go over, and there was a guy there would run the bowl. He could ride it, you know, spin around. Well, Rick, he gets on, and he wants to film this, would you? So I take my camera and film. Oh, I had his little camera. He gave it to me.
He nails that impression every time.
Yeah. And he goes, so he's on that bowl and he got his hand in the air, you know, and the guy's just not doing much, you know, because, you know, just twirling a little slow. Rick starts giving him crap. Come on, give it to me. You know, pretty soon that guy just flicks his finger, just jerked it, shot him right up in the air, right up in the air. And he lit perfectly. It was a mat, like a rat, like a little thickened wrath, and lit right on his head. And then his head, all the weight, his head cricked off to the side, and it pulled a muscle in the side of his neck. So the rest of the show and all the way home, and he can't turn his head only one direction. So I better shut up or we'll never. I see my battery thing just come on my phone. I'm ready to die.
Well, we've taken enough of your time anyway tonight, Randy. And thank you very much for taking the time. I've absolutely loved sitting here talking to you. And what was your Facebook page again?
Randy Anderson, Coyote Caller.
Sounds good. So
I think, I don't know. I don't even know how to run it hardly. My brother-in-law or my son-in-law made me get one. But you can go back. Man, there's hunts and hunts and hunts if you can find them. Just keep going back. You have to go back quite a ways. Haven't been putting up anything very new for a couple, 3 years. But, boy, you can see way back. You can see me calling the mountain lion and just hunt after hunt after hunt. But we'll start putting some more on. Few this year, then especially again next year, we're really going to start filming a lot again. So
yeah, and
after we get the new caller, what?
Congratulations on your retirement, also.
Yeah, I feel so guilty. Like man, I should be doing something.
It's time to go hunting,
fishing, calling, golfing.
There you go.
I played golf in college, so
okay.
I still like playing a little pasture pool.
Well, thank you very much once again, Kevin. Anything?
Yep.
Well, again, thank you. Really appreciate you taking the time.
All righty.
All right. Thank you very much. And everybody that's listening, thank you so much. We will talk to you all next week on the Overdrive Outdoors podcast.
Go Big Red. Go Big Red. Watch out for them Cornhuskers, Michigan, Michigan State. We're going to kick your rear end. You look out. Okay.
Perfect.